Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guests this week, Maureen, Guy, Toby, and Terry Mullally. Brian wrote two published novels, Make Me an Offer and If I Were a Blackbird, and was working on another fairly recently. What for Brian were the attractions of writing at length?
My dad, Brian, always wanted to write novels. Even as he was writing his short stories, he was developing and working on longer ideas. Novels allowed him to more fully explore the lives of his characters and the worlds that they lived in.
On the surface, the two novels seem to be very different. Are there connections between them underneath? What was the inspiration for each of them?
Brian and I worked together for over 30 years selling real estate. He had many stories that he wanted to tell, and his first book, Make Me an Offer, was the result. It was filled with anecdotes, real characters, and situations, with a complicated and hilarious romance, as love stories often are, woven through the book. If I Were a Blackbird was inspired by the fact that Brian had ancestors that he knew were in the Navy. He found family names in old Navy records, not as captains and commanders, but poor ordinary seamen, and he wanted to write about the conditions, hardships, and bravery of these men, and the women they loved and left behind. Although the contents of If I Were a Blackbird is very different from Make Me an Offer, it too is a love story, which makes it all the more compelling.
Can you tell us a little about the memoir Brian was writing?
The working title of his memoir is Leftovers, as it is made up largely of the many, many stories he wrote but never published. These stories capture the times he lived in and the people he knew who influenced his early life. The origins of many of the characters who appear in his fiction can be found here. Leftovers covers Brian's early life up until age 16, growing up in Croydon during the Depression and living through the Battle of Britain as a teenager.
And before we wrap up, we're going to ask Guy to read a tribute to his father, written by Guy. It's called Life is a Bowl of Cherries.
Life is just a bowl of cherries. That's the song he'd sing when he was happy, which was most of the time. Brian's wife, Maureen, would often say that you can be anything you want to be, and she should know. She was married to Brian for 64 years, met him when she was 19, and she lived and enjoyed proof of it. Brian could and did do everything he set his mind to, and he did it all very well. Perhaps that was the secret of his happiness. Brian was born in Croydon, England, on February 27, 1929. 6 months later, the stock market crashed and the world was plunged into the Great Depression, followed closely by World War II. It was a turbulent beginning for the eldest son of Minnie and Cyril. A second son, Brian's dear brother Ken, would arrive 11 years later. Minnie and Cyril taught their son to be grateful for what he had and not to expect a great deal more. Brian was a realist, but he was also an eternal optimist. He always focused on the positive and the endless possibilities. As a young boy, he loved school, loved to learn, read books, and dream about faraway places. At the age of 12, he witnessed the Battle of Britain over the streets of London and imagined being a fighter pilot. Unfortunately for him, perhaps less so for those of us who wouldn't be here without him, the war ended before he was old enough to enlist, but that wouldn't keep him out of the sky. In 1946, he joined the British Airways as an air steward and set out to see the world, traveling through parts of Europe, Africa, the Middle East and Far East, all the way to Australia in fabled Sunderland flying boats. Converted from military to passenger service after the war, Sunderlands took off and landed on water, had a maximum flying speed of 210 miles per hour and a range of 3,000 miles. It often took days to reach the destination, with stopovers all along the way, to take in the sights and plant indelible memories of the world in the late 1940s, the destruction of war and the rebuilding and hope for the future. Back home on Christmas Eve 1948, Brian met Maureen Sedgwick at the Strathmacarno, one of the grand London dance halls of the day. It was a night of magic, love was in the air, a love that grew and grew and blossomed into a great tapestry that was to become for both of them their greatest masterpiece. Brian and Maureen married on June 2, 1951, at Croydon Parish Church, and in a city still recovering and rebuilding after Hitler's relentless six-year bombing campaign, a time when most young married couples were forced to live with their parents, they were fortunate to find a small apartment. For a year or so, Brian continued flying, but when the children began to arrive, Lindy in 1953 and Guy in 54, he took a series of jobs to be close to his family. He worked in a plastics factory, sold furniture on weekends, then he sold bicycles and finally lawnmowers while Maureen worked as a hairdresser. Times were tough. They gave up their small apartment to Maureen's grandmother and moved in first with Maureen's parents and then with Brian's until it became clear to both of them that it was time for a new adventure, something big. The advertisements were everywhere. Come to Canada, land of endless opportunity, jobs for everyone. Brian sailed third class on the Queen Elizabeth along with hundreds of other immigrants and arrived in Toronto via New York to stake his claim in the New World on June 2, 1954. It was his third wedding anniversary. He was 25 with $10 in his pocket and a little book, 5 acres of independence. That was the plan, and he joined the endless line of fellow immigrants that snaked around the building hoping for one of the promised jobs. When he finally got to the front of the line, they put his name on the list with all the others. Never shy about coming forward, Brian put on his only suit and landed a job humping potatoes in the St. Lawrence Market. A short distance away, on notorious Jarvis Street, he found a room and worked for 3 long months to earn passage for his family to join him and to find a home for all of them to live in. Of all their years together, those 3 months would turn out to be the longest time that Brian and Maureen would ever be apart from one another, and it was not without temptation. One day, Brian found a wallet with a substantial sum of money. Oh, how he could use that money. But Brian was always honest. He turned the wallet in. Honesty is its own reward, he'd tell his kids. And sometimes the reward is a little more tangible. By the time Maureen and the babies arrived in Canada on September 17th, Brian had been promoted to payroll clerk and had saved enough money to rent the upstairs of a house in New Toronto. It was their first home in Canada, and it was right in the path of Hurricane Hazel that blew through town a month later. Brian and Maureen survived the windy welcome, and after a brief stint as dispatcher for a trucking company, Brian got a job at Avro, doing important work, counting nuts and bolts on the ill-fated Arrow. Although he worked at Avro for barely a year, Canada's first supersonic jet fighter would have a major impact on his life in the very near future. Brian left Avro to try his hand at real estate. Times were good, the economy was growing, and new housing developments were popping up everywhere. Shortly after Toby was born, 1957, Brian and Maureen bought their first home in Oakville. 2 years later, they sold that house and moved to a new development in Milton. Brian got his insurance broker's license and started selling insurance as well as houses. He had an office and a staff of 2 people. Another baby, Rita, was born in 1959. Another new housing development was planned. Brian would sell them all. The future seemed certain and golden. Then the government canceled the Avro. Almost 30,000 people were suddenly out of work, and the real estate market collapsed like a house of cards. The job required a university degree, but that didn't stop Brian. He needed a job, needed to get on with his life and find a new home for his growing family of 6. The phone rang. Texaco liked him. The job was his. Sales rep. He'd talked his way into it. Charming, engaging, and attentive, Brian knew how to talk to people and knew how to listen. Natural skills that he continued to hone all his life. If anyone could sell seashells on the beach, it was Brian. That was his job with Texaco, pushing product, pumping up the brand. He was responsible for a number of service stations within an area. It was all about managing people, earning their trust, and facilitating their needs. Brian thrived. He had a company car and a $10 expense account. He moved his family to Pond Mills, Ontario, a beautiful house in the country on the outskirts of London, where they put the final touch on their family with son number 3, Terry, 1963, and added a dog to the clan. London was Brian's turf, and he did such a good job of boosting sales that Texaco transferred to Toronto 2 years later. But having developed a taste for country life, Brian managed to find a farmhouse in Scarborough to rent, surrounded by empty fields that quickly gave way to housing developments during his 2 year stint in Hogtown. Once again, sales soared, and Brian was promoted to supervisor based out of Port Hope. Time to move again, but it was a dream come true, a farmhouse in the country. Once again surrounded by fields, but this time fields of wheat and barley, the farmhouse was on a working farm, with cows and horses, chickens, goats, and a pig. Brian took a breath, looked around, and realized that this was the perfect place to raise his family. By this time, much of his extended family had followed his lead and moved to Canada. Maureen's parents, Harold and Gwen, her brother John and sister Sandy, Brian's brother Ken had also made the journey, and in a few years after the death of his father, Brian's mother Minnie would join them as well. All would eventually find what he had found, a new place called home. Maureen and Brian found a piece of land, 20 acres, half wooded on the side of a hill, and decided to build a house. And oh, what a house it would be. 4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, finished basement with a double garage, circular driveway, and a swimming pool. A barn was later added for the chickens, goats, horses, and goose. They had it made, and they knew it. 5 acres and independence, indeed. Their very own country home. How far had they traveled to arrive at this? Those were heady years. Brian left Texaco when they promoted him to district manager and transferred him to Halifax. No thanks, he said. This is my home, and he'd started a swimming pool company, a family business. It was 1971, and new, affordable vinyl liner in-ground swimming pools were all the rage. Aquarius Pools, his daughter worked the stores, his sons ran the crews, and Brian kept the whole thing running smoothly, more or less, by doing what he did best, finding customers, listening to their stories, earning their trust, delivering on his promises, and backing up his product. 18 years went by. The kids grew up and left town. The country home was empty without them. The family business had had its day. It was time for change, time to move on. Brian joined Maureen in real estate, and together they sold their share of homes and properties in Cobourg, Port Hope, and the surrounding areas. They met a lot of people, heard a lot of stories, and became part of the community. They built a dream house on 5 acres of land in Baltimore and considered retirement. They took up hobbies, painting toy soldiers, historical scenes, and figures until their basement looked like a museum of ancient and modern history. Brian tried his hand at woodwork and turned out rocking horses for his grandchildren that Maureen painted. They gardened. Maureen painted pictures. Brian started mapping the family genealogy, and that changed everything. In 1992, Brian and Maureen sold their dream home in favor of a small bungalow on a large treed lot in a new development on the outskirts of Cobourg, and Brian began to do what he had always wanted to do, what he was very probably born to do. He started writing. He had so many stories to tell, so many anecdotes and insights into human nature, an incredible treasure trove of memories and experiences to share. But first he had to learn how to write. He had to find a voice and learn to express in words all the fantastic things he had experienced in his life. At 63, he was starting late, but that only made him keener. He took writing courses, joined writers' clubs, and wrote stories, dozens and dozens of stories, rewriting them over and over again until the characters leapt from the page and the dialogue sparkled. He sent them off to contests around the world. Then he wrote more stories, and the more he wrote, the better he got, and the better he got, the more he had to say. In all, he wrote 3 books, published 2, as well as a book of short stories and contributions to 3 other anthologies of short stories, not to mention the dozens of stories and the autobiography he was working on when he left his desk. This is the legacy he left behind for us, his life, his stories, the world as he saw it in all its brilliant shapes and colors. Learning how to write, how to tell a story, how to captivate and move people is Brian's gift to those he leaves behind. His work reveals his compassion, his sense of humor, his depth of understanding of the human condition. It is as alive as he was, and will remain so for all who read it. Brian Mullally, writer, salesman, entrepreneur, son, brother, lover, husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, a daring adventurer who took risks and defied odds, who traveled the world on a cork, built castles for his family, who always saw the best in people, always saw the sunshine peeking through on a cloudy day. A man who loved life and lived a life of joy and optimism.
Well, many thanks to all the members of the Mullally family for joining us today. Brian was certainly a great writer and a great colleague in the writing world, and all our members at Spirit of the Hills miss him. So we're very glad that you could take the time and join us today to talk a little about Brian and his writing life. Brian has left us, but the good thing is his work remains, and listeners can still get copies of his books. You can order them on Amazon or go to your local bookstore and they will order them for you. Also watch for local area events where Spirit of the Hills has writing tables, and we will always have copies of his books there for sale. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in the future programs to our email, wordonthehills897@gmail.com. Or connect with us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and are available to listeners at any time. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on Northumberland Radio 897. Truly local radio.